It was a beautiful day, Christmas day there. It was weather much like today, just absolutely crystal clear and beautiful. And we were all gathered to take part in this event, or to actually to make it happen. And that's something that's very important.
Everyone is familiar with Woodstock. Fewer people know of another event that happened right here in Laguna Canyon.
What actually happened is 20,000 people invaded Laguna Beach, and we had a good time. And there wasn't any fights. There was no problem. The only problem we had was the police wanting to end it the way they did.
The Canyon happening was an attempt to realize a wild dream. Laguna would host a massive gathering of art, culture, music, and spiritual awakening. And on Christmas Day, it happened. Sort of. I'm Rachel O'Neill Cusey, and this is From Radical Origins, Visit Laguna Beach's series about our town and the stories that make it a California icon. Episode 5, Short Strange Trip. Act 1, Psychedelic Dreaming. In 1970, Laguna was still in the throes of the psychedelic 60s. As a self-respecting art colony, the town was already made up of people dedicated to living unusually. But then, it was the forefront of a radical new countercultural movement.
We grew up in conservative Orange County when it was, you know, a pinstripe tie and a briefcase and go to work for 40 years and then enter your box and die. We thought life could be a little more than that.
That's Greg Thorne, one of our artists and jewelry makers. Greg has been involved in Laguna's art and music scene for almost 6 decades. He remembers a new idea sweeping his generation of young people.
We're all also in united protest against a horrid colonial war in Vietnam, which we did not support. And so some of the movement was a reaction to that closed-minded, violent thinking that we saw echoing through time and which unfortunately echoes to this day. We wanted to end that. We wanted to begin something else. Laguna Beach seemed to be a center for young people, new ideas, new music, and the surf culture. And I came here to learn about art. I went to the Sawdust Festival. I saw Bill Ogden's paintings there and a number of other artists, all of which inspired me to move to this town and to become an artist. Went to Mystic Arts, all those places. They were all inspiring with poetry and new ideas and magical change. That was the thing Laguna stood for in conservative Orange County. Magical change, the potentiality of it all.
Any way they could, they were going to make that change real. Whether it was through the power of love or the power of drugs.
I was already a participant in the conscious change involving psychedelics and LSD. And on one of those magical evenings when I was out in the forest, in Cleveland National Forest with the Indians, at least in my head I was with the Indians, and we had one of the most magical, transcendental, spiritual events in my life. And it took place over 24 hours. And I found myself, after all that magic, driving my van down to Laguna Beach to go thank Timothy Leary. That was my purpose at the end of the evening, was I just need to, as soon as he wakes up in the morning, I need to thank him for all I've learned.
That's right. The Timothy Leary was living in Laguna Canyon, pushing out LSD.
And so we drove our van down to Woodland Drive, parked right in front of the house that we now currently live in, which is hilarious. Parked the van. I don't think we were there for an hour before all the police showed up and got us out of the car. And they said, son, what are you doing here? You know, and I go, well, we wanted to speak with Mr. Leary as soon as the sun rose. And he said, well, how old are you? And I go, I'm 17. He goes, are you high right now? And I go, I don't like that word. You know that? He goes, well, are you on drugs? And I go, yes, sir, I am. You know, because you can't lie on LSD. You really can't. And I wanted him to see the benefits of this anyway. You know, I wanted him to know that this wasn't a bad thing. It was a good thing. Look at me. I'm, you know, very clued in right now. I'm even telling you I'm on LSD. And because I was 17 and a white kid with white privilege, I think we'd have to admit that, they decided to let us go. And he asked me, can you drive? And I said, sir, I've been driving all night, you know. I'm doing a good job. And he goes, where do you live? And I go, and it was hard to say the word Tustin on acid, I will admit. I said, I live in Tustin. And he goes, well, you need to drive home, right? And I go, officer, I'm going right now. And so I drove home that night. It wasn't but a few months ago, how many years later is that, that I got to thank those officers at the Laguna Beach Cultural Arts Center. They were all there watching Orange Sunshine, the film, and I think having a good time. And I said, you know, what a beautiful world this is, that you thought you were doing the right thing for your country, and so did I. And that those two can somehow coexist in a moment is a beautiful thing. And I go, no hard feelings or nothing. In fact, you probably saved my life, because if I had been arrested, my choice would have been 15 years in prison or going to Vietnam.
The usual things were floating around town, like patchouli, bead shops. The Brotherhood of Eternal Love was one of the unusual things. It was an international drug operation manufacturing and distributing LSD to awaken a psychedelic revolution.
The Brotherhood founded the Brotherhood to give access to spiritual awareness that is often engendered in the use of LSD, that transcends our everyday reality into a new paradigm where you drop your illusion of self and merge into a greater cohesive culture. That was their sole purpose. They dedicated their lives to that and continued to do that.
To one enterprising member of the Brotherhood named Curtis Rainbow Reed, it looked like there was also room for a music festival in the canyon. Unfortunately, we couldn't find Curtis for this podcast, but we could find his fellow visionary, Star Shields. Today, you can find him at the Sawdust Festival every year. But in the 60s, he was designing psychedelic stage and tour clothing for icons such as Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, George Harrison, Paul McCartney, the Allman Brothers, Moody Blues, and many others. To Star and Curtis, the concert was a way to change the world.
Curtis and a couple other people that were influential in making it happen, it kind of just happened. Before that, I was involved in LA with the Oracle magazine, and we used to put on love-ins up in the park, so we wanted to do something similar to that. Our plan for the festival was just to have a festival and celebrate people. And I don't think we expected it to go beyond 3 days. And we were very naive. We thought, wow, the peace and love is going to change the world. We're going to be doing this. And, but cultural peaceful revolution, not violent.
So did they maybe grab a permit or ask the city? No.
Well, we had some people that worked for the phone company at the time, local office, and we'd just say, hey, we're the Laguna Brotherhood, and they'd open up the line so we could call anywhere in the country for free. They just connected us. They were like insiders. And then there's some other insiders along the way that we got a hold of and helped us make things happen. A lot of it was rumor control. We just spread rumors, but some of the rumors were actually real. They weren't rumors. There wasn't any plan. It just made the posters and brought the bands in, built a stage, and people will come.
You heard it here first. No plan, no team. But as the rumors spread, they slowly stone-souped the event together. As Curtis and Starr told people about the event, the town started donating lumber for the stage, electronics for the instruments, and a generator to power the event. It looked like it was actually going to work. What people didn't know was that the police were part of the planning. In 2016, former police chief Neil Purcell told the police's version of them monitoring the events. In the 60s, he was the head of narcotics and had already infiltrated the hippie scene.
He needed some undercover officers. So these two officers had prior experience, and they dirtied up pretty quickly. I couldn't believe how fast both of them grew some beards, and we did buy some excellent wigs for them, and we bought some fatigues and army-type jackets and whatnot.
Chief Purcell remembered the first time he heard about the Christmas happening. It was notoriously compared to that other music festival that had happened a year prior.
15th or so of October, they came to me and they said, you know, we're picking up some information that there's a group here in town, and it's a couple of the people that have some of the hippie-type shops and whatnot. They're trying to get together a big happening, people from outside, other states and whatnot, to have a Christmas happening, much like Woodstock in upstate New York.
Initially, they wanted to have the event in Heisler Park. I think everyone in the know will see why that was a bad idea. When the canyon was proposed, these undercover officers encouraged the group to move there.
It was about a week later, my guys came to me, and each day we saw each other. We'd meet out in the canyon, different places. And they said, hey, is there a place, a lover's lane or something out in the canyon? And I said, well, yeah, we call it that. And they said, well, where is that exactly? And I said, well, it's just beyond the turnoff of Laguna Canyon Road and El Toro. You go out. Today it's now the Jim Dilley Park. And I said, that's a big grove of sycamore trees, and it's a big, wide area and whatnot. So he says, well, I'll talk to the city manager, but that sounds like, you know, that's the place. Can your guys, you know, start pushing that? And that's exactly what they did. And they started coming up with the neat place. All the verbiage they were using was, yeah, we sleep out there in our sleeping bags. The cops don't bug in, all this kind of stuff. And so they came back in a few days, and they told me, well, it's going to be there. That's what they're going to do. And they want more people. They're going to do everything they can to get all kinds of people.
Donating the generator was actually the police's way of keeping the crowds out there and preventing them from overwhelming the town.
They kept coming back and feeding information to me that, you know, we're going to, they're looking at trying to get equipment out there. They're wondering how they're going to build a stage. They need lumber. They need a big generator and all this kind of stuff. And so one of my other talks with the chief was, you know, they need all this type of stuff. What about if we were to furnish the generator? This will really put my guys in very tight with the organizers of this. And I said, maybe, you know, the city rents one and this and that. I said, when they were looking for lumber or someone to donate lumber, come up with that. So he said, well, see what you can do about a generator. This makes sense to me. That'll at least anchor them out there, and they won't be thinking about this Heisler Park. So my guys lay down a real bunch of bull with them and whatnot, some of these organizers, and said, yeah, we got a friend of a friend that has a great big generator and whatnot. He lives out there in El Toro, wherever El Toro is. Well, it was a rental place, and the rental agency was really reluctant, but the agreement was if that thing gets stolen, if it gets burned up or whatever happens to it, Laguna Beach is going to replace it. And so that was a guarantee. And so we got an old dilapidated truck and brought this generator down and put it on out there at Sycamore Hills. So that kind of fermented my guys are now, they're just with these people all the time. And of course, part of the deal is they had to sleep out there because they had to protect that generator.
Over the next couple of months, officers watched hippies build the stage, hook up the generator, and even get sanitary facilities ready.
As they started developing the property out there, as they developed it, they dug some large trenches that were going to be open latrines, if you will. And there were a few porta-potties brought in, but nothing that would handle a crowd, but at least for those that were building the stage and stuff like that, had them there.
Strange as it was, assisted by the police as it was, Curtis Rainbow's psychedelic dream was turning into weird reality.
It became pretty evident to my guys that this thing was growing. They were hearing it. All kinds of flyers went out. They were expecting and hoping for at least 25,000 young people. And you know, you look at Sycamore Flats out there and you think, boy, 25,000 people are here, and it's going to start Christmas Day. Are they going to be showing up here, you know, for a week or two ahead of time, and we're going to have these people all over town, or they just descend upon us?
Act Two, the happening. With preparations made, all the police could do was wait for the happening to actually happen. Narcotics officer Purcell wasn't sure how many people were going to show up.
I know I kissed my wife goodbye about 5:30 in the morning and says, well, I don't know when I'm going to be back home, but you know where I'm at. It's about 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning, we started noticing cars starting to roll in, and they just kept coming and coming. And they were coming from the south, they're coming from North End, they're coming down El Toro Road, down Laguna Canyon Road, and they started pulling into this place. It's like everybody knew exactly where it was.
Greg Thorne also remembers conservative elements of the town starting to get nervous.
It was a reaction of, oh my God, there's 10,000 people in our canyon, you know. They closed the canyon. That didn't stop anybody. They kept walking in anyway. They came from the beach. I saw people parked on the 405 freeway and hiking in. You were not going to stop this. This was going to happen. And the police realized that quickly and said, okay, just behave yourselves.
Frightened of a higher consciousness and spiritual awakening, concerned that tens of thousands of people were going to overwhelm PCH, the police and city council took drastic measures to limit the flow.
The decision was made by the Ivory Tower that, if this keeps up, we're going to have to close down Coast Highway and we're going to have to close down El Toro and Laguna Canyon Road, keep these people out. If you tried to do that today, I'd hate to think what you'd have on your hands.
The happening was, in fact, happening. And other people in town, they were blissfully unaware of the force's attempts to stop the hippie apocalypse. Two locals, Jay and Nikki Grant, both went to the happening before they were married.
Here, everybody was talking about it. It was supposed to be like a mini Woodstock, you know, and so... Yeah, I wanted to go to it. I didn't take drugs, but I was a good beer drinker back then, and I loved music. And there was all these rumors about who was going to show up. The Stones were going to show up. Bob Dylan might show up, you know, and the Kinks, all kinds of people they think are going to come in, and so I got my friend Gary Knoll on the first day of that happening, and we drove up as far as we could, which is right near where Annalise's is by El Toro Road and the Canyon Road, and got out of our car and walked up there and spent the better part of the day up there.
I lived on Laguna Canyon Road. He remembers driving out there. I can't even remember cars coming out. I just remember people starting in the morning, walking, you know, and then more people walking. I knew this thing was going to happen. People walking, and that's fine, but they're peeing in my front yard.
For Jay, it was something to do, For Nikki, the festival was a profound expression of love that would change the world.
People are walking, and then crowds of people are walking. And so then we decide to go. My friend and my significant other at that time and I decide to go. And so we walk out there and we're walking. I mean, seriously, it's like being on a peace march or something. I mean, there was just tons of people walking and we're walking out there. And by the time I got there, there was tons of people everywhere. Like when we were hippies, we really thought that we were going to change the world with love.
But it became clear to both of them that the festival was not quite shaping up to Curtis's vision.
A couple of guys would jump up with a guitar, you know, and do the best they could. But people kept saying, somebody's going to be flying in. There's going to be a helicopter coming in with a really awesome group. It's at any minute. That's what I remember people saying. A helicopter's going to come in with Bob Dylan or something, you know.
But we had already heard that nobody was showing. I mean, from what I understand and how I felt about it was like people were trying to manifest that it was going to happen. Build it and they will come. This is before, what was the name of that movie?
Field of Dreams.
So they're going to build it. I wasn't involved in building it or planning it or anything. And actually, I was a skeptic. But anyway, the happening happened. And so we walk out there and there's all these people and that's fine. I like people. But there were no, what do you call them, outhouses?
It was cold, wet, and messy. Yet people kept driving, walking, and even parachuting into the concert grounds. But remember all those musicians Jay was mentioning earlier? They never showed up.
A lot of people, you know, it was a scene and, you know, people had their clothes off and it was kind of nutty.
But someone else did arrive. You may have seen rain at festivals, but probably not this kind of rain.
But then anyway, this airplane comes flying through the air and drops all these things. We thought they were flyers or whatever, and they land and you pick them up off the floor and there's a tab on it. So naturally, we take it.
For those who don't know, the orange sunshine dropped on the crowd was the Brotherhood of Eternal Love's legendary LSD. Unfortunately, it wasn't the best trip for everyone at the happening.
After I took the LSD, after like 15 or 20 minutes and I wasn't feeling very happy about it, we decided that it was a spaceship that was dropping their waste. You know, like how we dump our waste in the ocean, like our plastic trash and stuff like that. And this is how they were getting rid of their waste. And there was a whole bunch of us who thought that we had been inundated by UFOs. But the thing is, for me, and I had a lot of experience, this was the only bad acid trip I ever had in my life. So I wish I could say it was wonderful, and have you met any people who said it was wonderful? Because for me,
that was kind of a little bit of a downer for me.
While the people at the happening were worrying about aliens, for Narcotics Sergeant Neil Purcell, the acid drop presented a different set of issues.
My guys, they see me out there, and they actually came out and they said, "Hey, Sarge, these cards, every one of these cards, there's more acid now than you can even think about." So then, you know, I relayed all that to the ivory tower through Captain Brown we're going to have some real serious LSD problems here. We're going to have people freaking out. And well, sure enough, we did. And we really had people, just going absolutely crazy. And a lot of them had to be, we had ambulance come out and take them to the hospitals. They were really flipping out.
And on the happening grounds, the love was starting to get a little too free.
Some of them got so high that out there, my guys were reporting, they said, "You won't believe it, but we got just open sexual relations going on." I mean, here, over here, here. People running around naked. They were loaded on LSD, and they were just freaking out. But they said, it's really a sight.
For Nikki and Jay, it was about time to leave. For Sergeant Purcell and the OC law enforcement, it was time to really get started. Act 3, the breakdown. The happening continued for days after Nikki and Jay left. While the police had bussed out the majority of the crowd during the second day of the festival, a tenacious group of 1,500 refused to leave.
We're trying to figure out, okay, we started making some announcements. Folks, you're going to have to leave, this and that. Well, you know, they would give us the international sign. And it just wasn't working out at all. And the day actually got away from us, and we thought, oh, good Lord, you know, it's going to get dark. And the acting chief at the time back here and said, you know, we're going to have to tackle this tomorrow. And I said, my guy is saying that there's some saying they're never leaving.
And they were running out of time. While the Laguna Beach Police Department had managed to guarantee some reserve aid, they couldn't hold on forever.
They've got to go home tomorrow, period, because New Year's is coming and they've got things happening in their town that they want their officers there.
About to lose their reinforcements and genuinely worried about the canyon picking up some new residents, Laguna Beach Police Department set out the morning of the third day with a plan.
We were bussed out there, and it was really freezing cold, boy. And we, just as the sun started coming, we started marching up in the back. And they gave me the great honor of being the first team to go in because I know the area. And I did not know that back area like that. I'd never all the sergeants from the other departments and whatnot said, no, you got to be the leader of this thing. So that was a good privilege. I enjoyed that. We started hiking up there, and we got up there, and we kind of split up and made a kind of a U-shape a little bit where they could see us when the sun comes up. But we'd all have to go down this one trail that happened to go down. It was a narrow trail, not wide, but that we'd all have to file down that trail when the signal was given.
This time, they even brought a plane of their own, without the orange sunshine.
He made a few circles, and the pilot got down pretty low, and you could hear him on the PA system telling him, okay, get up and walk towards the street. Don't bother to take anything with you. Just move out. Well, some of them came out of their, we could see them come out of their sleeping bags, and some of them were, you know, pulling down the pants and showing off their fannies to the plane that's going circling around there, and whoever that was in there was, they could look at that, and then they were giving the finger and yelling and screaming, and by now everyone's kind of awake, and that's about the time Captain Brown gave the order. We came down, our teams came down, and he's still flying around telling them to take a look around you, and they're coming in from the front, the front officers are, and we just got them all surrounded. Our teams in the back said, okay, you follow those officers that you're looking at up front. And if you can pick it up and carry it, fine, but we're not stopping. And there was more stuff left there than Carter had pills. And we just put them all out there to the highway. And we said, where do you think your car is? And some pointed. And we said, well, you can wait for buses here or you can walk. And they basically, we never had to have a bus go out there. They started walking.
As Nikki mentioned, people had trashed and urinated on front lawns as they were leaving. So as the crowd left the canyon, the officers were met with a warm welcome.
So we took half those officers because altogether we had 300 officers. And we just herded them right down Laguna Canyon Road. And as we got just on the other side of where the school is there, on the left side after you, where El Toro comes in, the homeowners there were cheering and clapping and carrying on. They were so happy to see this group being marched down the street.
But after the people were gone, everything they left behind wasn't. In its final cleanup efforts, the police department attempted to put the event to rest permanently.
City crews were all set, and the city had some other people, cleanup people, lined up. They were out there. We had a big bulldozer out there. They dug a giant hole, just a giant hole. And these teams were going out there picking up all the stuff, everything. The lumber went in first from the stage. That they ripped that apart and put that in there first. And sleeping bags and jackets and you name it, everything went in this hole. And it was deep. And then it was lit on fire. And we had the fire department out there. And they were making sure that fire wouldn't spread. And that everything out there just burnt right to the ground, was done. The fire department poured all kinds of water on it and whatnot, make sure it was out. The bulldozer then, boom, and buried. And every time I drive by there, I think, boy, there's a lot of stuff there buried, but it's deep. It's not going anywhere.
While physical evidence of the happening might be buried, its significance has not been. Sadly, former chief of police Neil Purcell recently passed away, leaving behind an epic legacy. But before he did, he and many of the participants of the happening, including former officers and older hippies, met at a showing of the documentary Orange Sunshine, where they were able to reminisce, share stories from the event, and reflect on an iconic moment they spent together despite their differences. To Greg Thorne, our night driver who traveled through the dark to thank Timothy Leary, it also exemplifies Laguna's version of a very American tradition. Dreaming what can be and making it happen, no matter the cost.
And then this was, you know, still on the cusp of that hippie movement, which I haven't cut my hair since the concert. The cats either, you know, chew it off or it gets caught in the door or I burn it with my jewelry torch, one or the other. But we should never forget that this country was founded by lawbreakers, smugglers, John Hancock for one. And so we're carrying on that proud, rebellious spirit.
Let's be clear, we're not condoning rampant lawbreaking. Public safety is paramount, and the fruits of a rebellious spirit are just as important as the spirit itself. But when the weirder angels of our nature move us to action, we should listen. Because they make strange, amazing, and yes, historic things happen for our community and the world. Short Strange Trip is a story from Radical Origins, produced by Visit Laguna Beach in conjunction with Laguna Sound. This episode is dedicated to former Chief of Police, Neil Purcell, for his long and commendable service to Laguna Beach. This episode featured Jay Grant, Nikki Grant, Neil Purcell, Star Shields, and Greg Thorne. It was narrated and created by me, Rachel O'Neill Cusey, written and produced by Skylar Vanderveen, John Zagowitz, and Linda Pribble. Special thanks to the Visit Laguna Beach team and board of directors, as well as our friends at Schieffer Chop Shop.